Hey, Bruiser Buddies, this is Wrestling Nostalgia with Dave Dynasty.
Before we dive into the episode, make sure you hit subscribe on the podcast platform you're listening on. Also, follow me on X at The Dave Dynasty and subscribe on YouTube by looking up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty. You can also buy one of my shirts at ProWrestlingTees.com/TheDaveDynasty. Now, enjoy the show.
Welcome to 1 hour of the toughest, roughest wrestling you'll ever see.
That's right, Dick the Bruiser said it all.
The big question, have you got the endurance? Have you got the brains to get past the excellence of execution?
The reason why X and myself were put on this earth is to demolish people.
Bobby Heenan, that is a very good-looking sport coat you've got on.
Yeah, and I paid for mine. Mine isn't government issue.
Yellow, everybody. Lance Russell and Dave Brown right along ringside. By golly, we're ready to go with another big week of championship wrestling.
Greetings, wrestling fans, and welcome to Wrestling Nostalgia. I'm your host, Dave Dynasty. Thank you for joining me for another episode. Hopefully everybody out there is doing great. Hopefully everybody had a good Valentine's Day. Hopefully everybody is looking forward to spring, which is just around the corner. But let's talk about today's episode. On this episode, my guest is the man known as Crowbar or Devin Storm. We talk about indie wrestling, the WCW, Iron Mike Sharp, and much more. So let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll have my interview with Crowbar. Phil Sundry Games is a tabletop cards and dice game company that has enjoyed success for over 3 decades. Their first game was Champions of the Galaxy and was released in 1986. Champions of the Galaxy is a tabletop game that features professional wrestling over 100 years in the future. Humans, aliens, and monsters battle in the Galactic Wrestling Federation for belts. Legends of Wrestling features officially licensed wrestling cards featuring stars like Ted DiBiase, Jimmy Snuka, Harley Race, and many, many more, including game sets for independent promotions. Each match takes place in real time. The action is fast and furious, and all the things that happen in pro wrestling, like cage matches, outside interference, three-man tag matches, they also happen in the games. You have the opportunity to run your own wrestling promotion involving either real-life stars or fictional characters of the future, or you can mix and match both. Visit PhilSingerGames.com for more information and to order the games today. That is Filsinger Games, FilSingerGames.com to order now. If you like horror movies, be sure to check out Dave Dynasty and Ike Isaacs on the Listen to Their Screams Horror Podcast. It is available on all podcast platforms and on social media at Listen to Screams. That is Listen, the number 2, and Screams. All right, and welcome back to Wrestling Nostalgia. At this time, I'm being joined by former WCW superstar Crowbar, also known as Devin Storm. Sir, how are you?
I'm doing okay, man. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. And, man, I'm looking forward to talking to you. So many levels. Let's start from the beginning, right? You trained with Iron Mike Sharp. Is that correct?
Yep, Iron Mike Sharp. I started my junior year of high school, believe it or not. I would drive down to Bricktown, New Jersey, probably an hour and a half drive. I was still in high school, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and get 2 in the morning and wake up for school the next day. So it was definitely an adventure. And being in there with Mike was a guy at that time, was a wrestler that, although he was not a top guy, he was a guy that I saw on Saturday morning wrestling almost every single week. So that was just mind blowing in and of itself.
Yeah. And, and again, this was a time, right, when it was not the rest of every Tom, Dick, and Harry saying they could quote unquote train a guy.
Yeah.
It was much harder to break into the business.
Yeah. It's like a guy kind of like I went kind of for a tryout. I believe I did really well in it. hindsight, taking bumps and back bumps and flip bumps and stuff like that. But there was still some level of vetting, you know, like there was definitely a vetting component to it.
Yeah. Yeah. And most of us know Iron Mike Sharp, right, from doing the enhancement stuff in WWF. And sure. But he did have a great career, even prior to that. Yeah. And
if you go on the network, one of my favorite things to do is watch the house shows from like Madison Square Garden, Boston Garden, Philadelphia Spectrum. And when the casual fan watched Mike Sharp on Wrestling Superstars, Wrestling Challenge, they were fast matches, but he always stood out because he had a very unique look.
Yeah.
He was a very big guy. He wore the forearm band and he always growled. And although he was an enhancement guy, everybody knew him. He was still a character. But sure. When you would watch him on those house shows, when they would give him time to have a full legitimate match, Mike could go.
Yeah.
Never really appreciated it when I was younger, but if you watch the way he wrestled, he never stopped. He very rarely grabbed a rest hold for too long, punch, kick, stomp. And while he was doing all that, growling and yelling there.
Yeah.
If you've ever been in the ring or the younger wrestlers that may not be familiar with Mike Sharp, when you're going hard and your heart's pumping and you're breathing hard and you're sweating, thrown in that extra verbal is exhausting. And he worked fast. He worked hard, and he had that. He was verbal the entire match, which takes an unbelievable amount of stamina and like cardio. The guy was in shape, you know?
Yeah. And it's funny, like guys, right? Like my age, right? You, a lot of them think Iron Mike Sharp, right? They think quote unquote the jobber guy. Right. And they know him, but whatever else. But when you dig deeper, right, and if you learn more about wrestling and watch a little more wrestling, prior to that, Mike Sharp had a great career.
Yeah.
And
great prior, but even during the WWE times, like,
sure,
he would do TV and he would get squashed most of the time. But when he did those house shows, he always got a great match. You know, you would always see Mike Sharp, you know, go 10, 15 minutes sometimes.
Yeah, right. And those of us, right, who who know this stuff and watch, right, you've heard all the stories about Mike Sharp and the showers and everything else. What was he like personally to be around? Was he, because everybody talks about he had an OCD component.
Very quirky.
To
him. Yeah. So if you ever played hockey, the goalie has a ton of equipment and the goalie would have these giant bags, these giant duffel bags for all their stuff.
Yeah.
And he had what I believed was a goalie bag. And I describe it like one of those Russian egg dolls. He would open the sack, and inside the sack, there was smaller bags labeled. And inside the smaller bags were smaller bags and smaller bags smaller than that. He was extremely organized and just very quirky, but such a great guy. And I really liked Mike a lot. And very quirky, where at that time, when I was 17 years old, it didn't stand out as odd because I knew nothing of pro wrestling. But when I work out now, if I find time to go to a ring and work out and just roll around, you know, get a sweat, try some new moves, I wear my boots, I wear knee pads and elbow pads, and I wear sweats or shorts and a t-shirt or a tank top. Mike got in the ring to train us. He dressed as if he was going out to the garden. Black boots, black trunks, no shirt. Sometimes he would wear the armband, sometimes not. But he would oil up to instruct us. So he trained us, and he looked just like he did on TV. And again, at the time, having no perspective, that seemed totally normal.
Yeah.
Now, it's like batshit crazy.
Yeah. But I'm sure, though, at that time, right, that made Mike Sharp probably look even larger than life.
And right? That's the thing, too. He looked larger, but just I really don't think people appreciate how big this dude was. Big guy.
Yeah.
He easily could have been, you know, a higher mid-level guy. Yeah. Not really, you know, wrestling is very political. I don't know odds and ends of it, but he's definitely somebody that I think could have used a lot better than he did. Like,
sure.
Again, every house show you saw him on was at the very least, if not a good match with anybody.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. And you came out of training, right? And you began wrestling and you started using that name, Devin Storm. So first of all, what were the origins of that name, Devin Storm?
Well, so at that time, you know, you're a dumb high school kid, right? You're a dumb high school kid.
Yeah.
You're trying to think of a name, and you want something that sounds cool. And I'll be honest, there was a guy very briefly in WCW called J.W. Storm. I'm not sure if you remember him or not.
Yep, I do.
But I always liked the last name Storm. I like that.
Yeah.
My sophomore, junior year of high school, I spent down at the Jersey Shore with my family, met a girl. It never became like boyfriend, girlfriend, but we hung out a lot and, you know, we kind of wrote each other, you know, dating myself with that. There was no email. There was no text. Write letters back and forth. It sounds corny, but she lived in Devon, Pennsylvania, D-E-V-O-N. I thought that name was just cool as hell. And sure. So I like Storm. I like the name Devon Storm. And that's how it came about.
It's funny because I think you and I are pretty similar in age, right? I'm 50 right now. And
I'm about to be 52.
There you go. Soon. See, we're close. In
a couple weeks. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, happy early birthday.
And, thanks, man.
Yeah. And I remember at that time when you were breaking in, right? I bought all the magazines and whatever. There was a group of you guys that we all, avid wrestling fans, knew, even though we didn't watch you, from the magazines and stuff. And it was such a, I don't know, almost a shift in the business.
Yep.
But there was this, like I said, this group of guys that we all knew, right? And I traded tapes, right? And I got to see you guys a lot.
Yep.
And obviously, right, you stood out, right? That Devin Storm. And everybody thought, oh, Devin Storm, right? He was going to be one of the next big things. But it's now, where I sit now, looking back on it, it's weird. What was your perspective during that time? Did you have a feeling that you were trying to do something different to make your name to stand out?
I was definitely doing stuff differently. I would get my hands on the tapes from Japan. And at that time, you started to see 1-2-3 Kid. You started to see Jerry Lynn. You started to see a little Sabu, too. And at that time, the business was primarily really big guys, really big guys. I mean, the guys that were like 6'2", 6'3", or more.
Yeah.
And jacked up, you know, that was a time when the guys were definitely taking their vitamins, we'll say. And, they were very big, but I wanted to do this. And, I was always a very fat kid in high school. And as I got towards my senior year, I started getting involved with weightlifting more, but it took a long time for my body to develop. So if you recall, if you look back at those pictures, I wore like a bodysuit. I concealed my body while I was in the process of trying to get in shape. And at that time, that was pre Mikey Whipwreck. Mikey Whipwreck became the guy that made it acceptable to wear clothes, really, in the wrestling ring, shorts and a shirt. And you had Sandman starting to do that. But when I broke in, you had to have tights. You got them from either, trying to think what the hell it was, Kate or Adrian Street.
Yeah,
you had to get tights. You had to get proper tights. If you showed up at a show in clothes or sweats or a t-shirt, forget about it. You were ribbed or like blacklisted or whatever. You needed proper tights. So I covered myself up. And where am I going with this? I was going somewhere. Guys like me, guys like Ace, who, you know, one of my best friends, Supernova, Reckless Youth later on, we started emulating that Japanese style, that Sabu style, that 1-2-3 Kid style, that Jerry Lynn style. And part of being known, I tell it like it is, we did work hard. We were doing very innovative stuff. But I will say, guys like me, Ace, Lance, Diamond, we were very geographically blessed. We worked on the coast, which was Pennsylvania, was the hub for PWI, The Wrestler, and all of the wrestling magazines. So the people that wrote for them, people that took pictures for them, like Brett Mankiewicz and Bill Apter and George Napolitano, those guys were always around our show. So that gave guys in our area a really distinct advantage. We were working hard. We were doing innovative stuff, but you can't discount with the fact that we were very lucky, very geographically blessed that we were near these people who were writing the magazines.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was, I don't think anybody now that thinks of independent wrestling doesn't understand, I guess, the landscape at that time. Right. Because there was a lot of guys coming off TV.
Yeah.
Right. And there was, those were the guys, right? The Bundys and the, all those guys.
Honky Tonk.
Honky Tonk. Yeah. Those guys were everywhere.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. And a lot of times, right, you would think those were the guys that maybe people were going to see because they knew those guys. But when they walked away, they were talking about the Devon Storms and stuff like that. That and those of us who read the magazines, that's what we got, right? There was like, and like you said, geographically, right? The Northwest was, that was the hotbed for this stuff.
Yep.
And so it was this, now looking back historically, right? There was this weird transitional time, right? Yeah. Because it was, like I said, people were going to see, I know Honky Tonk Man. I'll go see Honky Tonk Man. But then they come away and say, damn, that Devon Storm had a great match. Who's that guy? Yep.
And very often it was with our friend Ace Darling. He'll never say it himself. And I always make the point, there was me. There was Reckless. There was Simon Diamond. There was Supernova. And there was other guys. And we all get together collectively and we talk about that time. We all say, hands down, without question, reservation or any kind of doubt, the best one of our group was Ace Darling, Mike Moraldo. He just unfortunately never got that break, but he looked great. He could have a great match with anybody, and he was just unfortunately a guy that probably deserved to make it more than any of us, and he just didn't for some reason.
Yeah, and Ace, the guy, right? You teamed with a lot back in those days, right? Yeah,
some of the best times of my career, and I still tell him, was the time we wrestled each other, but I had so much fun teaming with him. Some of my best wrestling memories were working with Mike. You know, I would finish school, I would drive down. If the show was near him, I would pick him up, or if it was up around me, he would meet me, and we would go to a show around here. But some of the best times I had in a wrestling ring was teaming with Ace Darling.
Yeah, and during that time, give us a little perspective, right? Because I'm assuming, right, you go to these shows, and then there was these former TV guys.
Yeah,
and then there's you guys, right? And they're probably saying, okay, yeah, Devon, right, whatever. Devon work Ace, whatever. Just you do your thing. Don't worry about that. So in that moment, were you guys saying, hey, let's go out there and steal the show. Let's do our thing.
We always did.
Different.
Yes. Yeah. We always tried to, and frequently we would get to the back and we would get yelled at for doing too much, for trying too hard. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, but now it's funny looking back, because that kind of stuff, I mean, that changed the direction of pro wrestling.
Sure. Yep.
And it's in retrospect, looking back, right? Because that's what WWE, WCW started modeling themselves after. That's the kind of stuff that ECW kind of turned into, was some of the stuff that you guys were doing.
Yep.
And it's funny now, right? Look back in that time, how you guys were getting heat for this stuff.
Sure.
But now, I mean, I know maybe it, right. You're whatever it does, like with Ace, right. It didn't pay off in the long run, but he helped change the face of pro wrestling.
Absolutely. Yep.
And I know whatever, you could give him his props and maybe that, I mean, I guess that's a little, you know, I'm sure he would have wanted a little contract and some money.
Sure.
But you can't dismiss his place or any of your guys' places in the history of wrestling.
Sure. You know, we always said, like collectively, if we broke in maybe 5 or 6 years later, maybe it would have been a different story.
Yeah. And well, and part of that, right, you were doing your thing. And you had a little run in ECW.
Yep.
It which seemed like a perfect fit, right? Yeah. Devin Storm and ECW, right, in the 95, 96 era.
Yep.
Seemed perfect, but not a lot came of it.
Nah.
What? Why? Why is that?
Well, there's several things. So I was one of the, if not the top guy for Dennis Carluzzo, had a very well-documented Paulie. But I still made the jump because of the opportunity. There was opportunity in ECW. Chris Candido saw that, who was also a big Dennis guy. He meant no ill intent for Dennis, but he saw for his own career that ECW could do something for him. That was definitely part of it. I think a huge part of it was that I really didn't fit the ECW culture either. Okay. That was, you know, the guys would go out very often, they would tear it up. You name it, they were doing wild stuff. I would usually go back to my room and I would study. I was a full-time college student and I was going for physical therapy, which is a very competitive field and a major that requires you, you know, A's and B's, mostly A's. Yeah. And that was at a time when online classes did not exist. You had to go.
Right.
And so I would do my match and I would very frequently, I would bring my books to the shows. Before the shows, I'd be studying. I would do my match. I would come to the back. I would study again. And some of the guys saw that as disrespect for the business, that I wasn't watching. And meanwhile, I would go home and I would watch ECW show again and again.
Yeah.
But we're talking about a time when guys were drinking a lot of alcohol. They were doing a lot of drugs. They were doing a lot of wild stuff after the show. And I just was not part of any of that kind of activity.
Yeah.
And so I really never became one of the guys or those guys. So I really didn't fit in with that culture. Yeah. And then I'm also going to be fair too. I was doing a lot of wild stuff, but I was still, you know, when I look back at those matches, I was still kind of green and still kind of learning. So part of that was on me.
Yeah.
And also I only found out later on in life, I am on the spectrum completely. ADD, ADHD, extremely socially awkward.
Yeah.
So I had a hard time talking with people as well, which may have been interpreted as I don't talk to people or maybe I'm whatever.
Yeah.
You know, so all those factors probably played a huge role in why I was kind of kept at a lower card position.
Yeah, I completely relate to that, right? Social situations for me have always been weird because it's weird because I don't like that small talk stuff.
No.
And, you know, I'm like, okay, you know, peak your moments. I always kept my circles tight. There's a few guys.
Yep.
And now, right, I understand a little more what that is. Back then, people just called me an asshole.
I was always the weird kid in high school. I grew up with an extremely terrible stuttering problem, which now I have a lot of control over. But at that time, I was still overcoming that social weirdness.
Yeah.
And I'm thrown into a situation. It's this a company that the talent takes very seriously. They take the social aspect of the company, you know, behind the scenes very seriously too. So that was definitely a component. Maybe socially, I was not prepared to be ready to work hard. I was ready to do wild stuff. I felt very comfortable in my in-ring stuff and what I could do for them, but I never really mastered it. Even to this day, I'm not a guy for small talk. I won't initiate conversation, but if someone initiates with me and they have questions about wrestling or spots or this or that, it's like opening up the floodgates, and I'll talk forever, but I would very rarely interject myself into any kind of conversation. So I kind of kept to myself in like the corner of the locker room, and I studied, and I really didn't say much to anybody. I never went out. I never tore it up. So me and the ECW culture was like trying to mix oil and water, I think.
Yeah. I completely can relate to that. And it was, again, that I think that is also a testament to that transitional time, right? Where there's this old school mentality, and I'm not saying what's right or wrong, but whatever it is, right? Of, the socialization, the boys in the locker room and this and that. And it's starting to shift, right, into what we have now, which is maybe a little more accepting and whatnot. But there's obviously a period where it's a blur of both.
Yep.
And some guys get caught up in that. And it's not, that's not just a wrestling thing, right? That's just a society thing.
Yeah. That's a life thing. Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. But when you look back at wrestling during this whole time period, right? Anything you almost look at, Devin Storm is there. Right. Yep. I mean, you pop up in ECW doing, you know, several pay-per-views and appearances. You had a handful of matches in WCW, and then you show up in the WWE light heavyweight title tournament, which was at that time was a very cool thing, because it was a different concept for WWE, right? You lost to the eventual winner, Taka Michinoku.
Yep.
But it was a whole, right? Because there's like you and there's Tommy Rogers and all these unique people doing this tournament. Who was in WWE that noticed you to set that appearance up?
Well, Dennis Carluzzo, who I worked for quite a bit, was very good friends with Jim Cornette. And I had been doing ECW. I had been working for Dennis. I was doing nightlies for WCW, all while I'm a full-time student. And I get a call from Jim Cornette, who's awesome. I love Jim Cornette.
Yeah.
He's done so much for me. He goes, well, WWE wants this damn light heavyweight thing. All the top shelf guys are down WCW. So we said, fuck it. We could bring these guys in. He goes, you want to come and do it? I go, yes, I do want to come and do it. So that was basically saying, you're not a top shelf guy, but you're good. And if you want the opportunity, we'd love to have you. So the answer, without question, is a resounding yes. And thank you so much for the opportunity. And wow, this is really cool.
It was, and watching it at that time, it was, again, like I said, it was so unique for WWE, right? Because they had their guys and they did their thing. But then all of a sudden there was this thing. And you have, like I said, Tommy Rogers, Devin Storm, and these guys from Japan, Taka Michinoku, and some guys from Mexico.
Brian Christopher.
And Brian Christopher. Yeah. And it's so unique. And it's like, I don't know. Maybe they made a mockery of this top show. But to me, it felt like, oh, hell, this is a lot of top talent.
Sure.
Coming in to do this. And this is so cool. Yeah. And you appeared in WWE, for the next couple of years doing some spots, but nothing really came of it, right? There was not a lot. No push, no whatever. But was there ever any discussions for you to do more with him?
So I did the light heavyweight thing. Ace and I had a few matches as a tag. We had a dark match in Philadelphia against the Misfits, which is like another big independent team at that time on the East Coast. Mm-hmm. And then we worked Brian Christopher and Scott Taylor, who became
The Too Cool thing.
Before they were Too Cool.
Yeah.
And then I was actually still finishing up school. I graduated and I worked in a hospital full time. And then they called me for the Funkin' Dojo. Back then, Dory Funk was would run these 1 week things for WWF. Like, I guess 1 week, what you would call evaluative camps, I guess. And I was invited to two of them. Went to the first one, did well. Went to the second one, and just nothing materialized.
Yeah. It seems peculiar to me. But coming out of that, right, you get scooped up by WCW.
Yes. So during that time, I'm doing the light heavyweight stuff on a nightly basis because I'm now working and stuff like that. And I had seen Dallas Page, who I had become or friends with during my many shots throughout the years for WCW. You know, I did cruiserweight things. I did, you know, they always, with the exception of a few, they would use me for Saturday night and they would always give me a decent match.
It
was never a total squash. They always let me do some stuff. And Dallas Page pulled me aside. And at that time, wrestling was very different than it is now. Like, you had Saturday night, you had like these B shows, these C shows where you saw a lot of enhancement talent. And at that time, Dallas goes up to me. He goes, "You're doing better. You know, finish school, go to work and keep making yourself better. But I want you to stop doing these shots for WWE. Otherwise you may get typecast as an enhancement guy."
Yeah.
So that's when I stopped going to WCW. And shortly thereafter, that's when Jim Cornette called. So I did the light heavyweight thing. I did the Funkin' Dojo. I kept making myself better. I kept trying to make myself a sharper wrestler, a better performer. And then I reached out to Paige. And then I believe it was early summer or late spring of 99. He goes to bat for me and he gets me signed.
Yeah. And this is where we see a shift in your character, a big shift.
Yes.
Right. Because Devin Storm, right? People think Devin Storm, and some people think, they visualize Crowbar. That's not true. Devin Storm, you did kind of the blonde rocker thing for a long time.
Yep. First, it was a bad mullet and this outlandish neon green and black bodysuit. Then as I got into shape more, it was still neon green and black, but with bleach blonde long hair.
Yeah.
And then what I noticed was I had gone to the two Funkin' Dojos, and at that time they had signed Edge, they had signed Test,
yep,
they had signed Christian Cage, and there were a lot of guys with blonde,
bunch of bleach blonde
hair. Yeah. So I said, I have to change the way I look because I look like everybody else, and I went to the dark hair, and that's what really it was a decision that was made simply by looking at the landscape, seeing a lot of blonde-haired guys, saying, "I look, you know, like this cookie-cutter blonde-haired wrestler. I have to do something to change myself."
Yeah, and whether it played into it though, it was the timing was perfect, right? Because in society there was a shift in things.
Yeah.
Right? Music's going to grunge. Things are getting gritty and dirty and whatnot. It's all that 90s neon polishes. People are revolting against it, so to speak.
Yes.
So it was a perfect timing, much like why a guy like Raven succeeded, right? Was because it's
change look.
Yeah, you tapped into that thing. You've said a lot of times, right, that Jimmy Hart was a big proponent and letting you do your thing. Is that correct?
Yes, big time. Yes. So I got to WCW shortly thereafter. I start doing a Saturday night show as this gothic, dark Devin Storm. What do you call it? Like the velvet trunks, the eyeliner,
yeah,
the choker around the neck, and just being more aggressive. And I went from this flashy, very colorful, rockery type guy to this dark, almost demonic, like demented, evil cruiserweight type of guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Well, so where did the shift in names to Crowbar come from?
So I had about, I want to say, 6-7 matches on Saturday night. And they were grooming the act actually to be a cruiserweight that would start out on Saturday night and eventually make my way up to the main roster and be a more evil, aggressive cruiserweight that would sometimes incorporate the stairs and chairs and guardrails, kind of like an ECW-esque. Yep. I call it the Sabu, the Rob Van Dam, the Jerry Lynn style, where you would use technical wrestling and then you would use chairs and stuff, but not just careless, like bludgeoning people with chairs, not just fighting and brawling. You would incorporate those props into technical, fancy, nice, cool looking moves.
Yeah.
And that's what I was being groomed to be. My last match on Saturday night was in Vail, Colorado. I first got to wrestle Chris Benoit, which at that time, for me, huge fan of him at that time, me getting to wrestle Chris Benoit was like an a normal wrestler that came up getting to wrestle Hulk Hogan. That's how big it was for me.
Sure.
And we had a great match. That match on WCW Saturday night got the highest rating that show had gotten in years. I think we broke a 2.0, which had not been done forever.
Right.
But at that taping, when I flew in, Nitro had ended. I flew in, I went to the hotel bar to get something to eat, and everybody was there from TV, and Vince Russo was there. And as I was told, he liked my look. He said, "Who is that guy? He has a really cool look." And he said, "Oh, that's Devin Storm, yada, yada, yada," and they explained. So while this is going on, David Flair is on Nitro and Thunder a lot.
Yeah.
And he's acting like a total psychopath.
Yep.
He's stalking people backstage. He's harassing women. He's beating guys with a crowbar, wink, wink.
Uh-huh.
The only problem is David Flair, not a very strong in-ring performer. But if you go back, their issue, as it was explained to me, David Flair was getting good ratings on the quarter hour. People liked watching whatever this nut was doing.
Yeah.
So you're faced with the problem. You have a guy that's actually drawing ratings, but you really can't put him in an in-ring situation because he's not very proficient. He's not very good. And he knew that well. So they came up with the idea, we'll take David, we'll team him with a proficient tag partner that could do the majority of the in-ring work. And Crowbar was born.
Yeah, and obviously this is, I would say, probably the period you're most known for.
Yeah,
obviously because of the exposure.
Sure.
Right, and you and Flair, you win the tag titles and lots of other stuff. And like you said, David Flair has been talked about so many times, but it always, I hate it because it always seems like it's in this negative light.
Yep.
When people talk about David Flair, and it's almost like this split understanding of wrestling, right? There's a work rate understanding, and then there's a working understanding, right? Like you said, maybe David Flair wasn't the best in the ring, but he was drawing ratings.
He was an interesting
sure
character. And
yeah,
for people that talk about David. I love David, who was a great guy.
Yeah.
How old was he then? Maybe 20-something, maybe?
Yeah.
21, 22. So he's a son of Ric Flair.
Yep.
They offer him a job. What, ask any wrestler right now or any wrestling fan, if they were offered that spot, would they not take it? I'm sure as hell they would.
You know, sure.
But he knew his limitations. He always tried to get better. He always worked hard. And, you know, for what he did, and him, myself, Daphne, what we did collectively, the younger kids, the teens, the college age kids loved what we did.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have no problem with David, right? I always enjoyed David's work. But I think a lot of the negativity stems from the fact that, right, he's a Flair.
Yeah.
His dad's Rick. Everybody looked at David and said, you should be Rick.
Yeah.
You should be this. And David was doing his own thing, you know, and I guess that's a age old tradition in wrestling, right?
Of sure. Yep.
And it's unfair. It's right. It's unfair to David. Yep. And you knew him personally and you worked with him and traveled with him and everything else. Did that weigh on him at all?
I think it did. Yet he always tried to get better before the matches. We would try some moves. There was actually a short period of time when he turned heel and they broke him away from me and Daphne, and we had a couple singles matches. It's, I believe it's on a Thunder somewhere. I have a singles match with David, and it's no five-star classic. You know, it's not at all, but I'll be damned if you watch that match. It's a solid match that told a story, and it really demonstrated how, as he matured as a wrestler, David got better.
Yeah.
A whole lot better.
Yeah. And before we move on, are you still in contact with David? How's he doing these days?
I have not spoken to him in years.
Okay. I know he separated himself a lot from the business.
Yeah. I really don't know the exact dynamic, but it's just he wants something to do with it as far as I know. Because there, of course, have been people over the years that, we'd love to get you and David back together, or we'd love to do it even if you just work and David manages you, or he's in your corner. It would be a cool surprise. This and the other thing. And from what I know, anybody that reached out to David, he just wants nothing to do with it.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I can understand that. And, sure. And of course, when you talked about the group, you mentioned, right? Of course, there's Daphne.
Of course.
Yep. And everybody, I mean, everybody knows Daphne.
Daphne.
Loves Daphne. You can't not love Daphne. There's just no way about it, right? And she's gotten a lot of attention. There's been a Dark Side of the Ring episode. So much talked about. So much love shared. So many great stories of what Daphne has done for people, for the business, for whatever it is. But again, you worked with Daphne. Daphne, you were close to her on a different level. What did Daphne mean to you?
I'd say collectively, me, Daphne, David Flair. We were three kids just enjoying the ride, I think. You know, at that point of our career, we knew we were in a really cool, fun spot. We all knew that wrestling is finite, that it might end, but tomorrow they might, you know, they might just cancel your character or whatever. So we enjoyed the full time we were there. Personally, I had never seen somebody take more time out for her fans than her.
Yeah.
We all see people, even if we're busy, I always try to shake hands or sign something or at least make a little small talk and this and that. Daphne went out of her way to engage in like in-depth conversation with kids and her fans. And she gave so much of herself and her time to her fans. And I really believe that that's why to this day, her fans are so loyal and they love her so much.
Yeah. And it's very, I don't know the word, right? It's peculiar, I guess, to look at the three of you, right? Because you have you, right, who came out of it. You have this great career after wrestling. You're still making appearances, but this very healthy transition from wrestling, right? You have David, who obviously there's probably some bitterness and wants nothing to do with the business, has separated himself from it. And then you have obviously Daphne, who's no longer with us. It's like you three have the three outcomes, right, for professional wrestling. Yeah, and it's sad to say that it has to be that way, but it has always seemed to be that, to be that. And I don't know. I guess it's unique that you three have you had these different paths out of after the WCW fallout.
Like I'm sure a big part of David's issue is that pro wrestling, his dad is so famous and known as being one of, if not the greatest of all time. Yet, if you look at the story, pro wrestling wreaked havoc on his family, the family life. And I always say this, and I'm not trying to be snarky, but or holier than thou or anything of the sort. But when I got involved in pro wrestling and I started doing the independent shows, I saw a lot of veterans that I watched growing up, and they were doing these shows not because they wanted to, but because they had to. They had to be there, and they hated it. They always talked about how this part of the business sucks and this part of the business sucks. And, this guy screwed me because he fired me too soon. WCW did this, or WWF did this to me. And I always knew when I got involved, that it's finite, that if you were to get an opportunity, it may last forever. Not forever. I mean, you might have a long career like a John Cena, or you might be, a couple months or a couple years. And that, so I knew I had to have something else, which is why I so strongly pursued the physical therapy career simultaneously with pro wrestling. So because of that, because I had that license, because I had that career, it enabled me to really enjoy myself when I did it. I knew it could end at any time. I knew that when it ended, I had something that I could support myself with. And if I ever had a family, I could support a family with. So it really, and it enabled me to enjoy myself so much. There was no pressure on it. And fast forward, I'm 52. Not many people can make a living on independent wrestling. I have the business, I have a family. I'm out here. My career choice, it enables and empowers me to still do it because I choose to. I am wrestling now because I genuinely believe I love pro wrestling more than anybody else on the planet, and that's why I'm still doing it. And I will continue to do it as long as my body lets me at a respectable level, at a high level.
And I do want to mention real quick, right? The end of WCW's run. Just this is pretty unique, right? You were the hardcore champion. You had a feud with Terry Funk, which had to be such a cool, amazing spot for you at that time.
Huge Terry Funk fan. And even now, when I think back, I always say I wrestled Terry Funk, who was one of my favorites growing up, at Starrcade, which, for those who don't know, but the younger fans, that was WCW's WrestleMania. And we wrestled for a title at the last Starrcade. So even to this day, very, very surreal. The only thing I wish did not happen was I wish I wasn't doing the 70s gimmick during that match. But I still wrestled Funk at Starrcade, and it was totally amazing. And then the following pay-per-view, it was me, Funk, and Meng, who I was also a huge fan of. So I still call myself the world's biggest by far wrestling fan. So just those two experiences there, even to this day, as almost 52-year-old Chris Ford, so surreal and incredibly thankful for those experiences.
And then, right, and WCW comes to a close, bought out by WWE. You're still doing some things. You had a short run with TNA under the name Tempest.
Yep.
You've made an appearance for AEW. You seem to still pop up all over the place. Do you feel, though, now, at this point in your career, right, you talked about, right, you still love it. You still do these, you know, you wrestle. You still make these appearances. Do you feel, though, that you've transitioned to that role of a mentor, helping the younger talent when you work now?
People always ask me if I would ever want to be an agent or a coach for, like, WWE or AEW or TNA, and it sounds selfish, and I say no. I'm a very bad spectator, and I'll equate that to in high school, I hurt my knees playing football. And one of the hardest things for me to do was to stand on the sideline and watch my team play.
Yeah.
I have to be involved. I have to be actively involved. So I will say this, if I go out there and I wrestle with a young guy, an up and comer, I always ask to wrestle with the young lines. It keeps me in shape.
Sure.
It makes me push myself. And I get so much satisfaction knowing that I could still hang and do a modernly acceptable match with these guys. So if I can mentor as I wrestle with them, that's great. If some young guy wants to pick my brain in the locker room because I'm on with the same show and they want my opinion on this or that, I'm happy to do that. But I could never see myself going to a show just to be an advisor or an agent or a coach. And again, not to be snarky, for me, that's not fun. And I don't need to do that in order to make money. You know, some guys, that's a natural transition and that's great for them. But I own my own physical therapy facility. It's 3 minutes from my house. If I'm going to travel somewhere, I want to be wrestling.
Sure.
Not watching, not advising, not on the sidelines. If I'm going to go somewhere, especially if it's a distance, I want to be putting on my outfit and acting like idiot Crowbar.
Yeah. Well, and like you said, right, you are a physical therapist. You've not had that issue of kind of being lost after your wrestling career peak is done. So many guys, right? So many guys just, I don't want to, you know, I'm not meaning this to be disrespectful, but so many guys just take whatever payday they can get because they need to, they have to.
Yep.
You haven't had that issue. There's a few of you guys that haven't, but then there's so many of your peers that don't. Do you attribute, you mentioned it, seeing these former TV guys, do you attribute that to that, keeping that drive of, oh, I've got to make sure I'm good after this is done you to be able to transition to your post-wrestling life?
Well, and I always say this too, and it's kind of funny. I am probably the worst wrestling businessman on the planet because I openly express how much I love doing this stuff. So if I get a call for a booking, of course I want to make sure if it's a drive that it's worth it for me to make the drive and tolls and time. And if it's a Friday night, if I have to leave work early or something like that, which makes me have to pay one of my therapists to stay later to cover my patients. But before I ask about money, I want to know who my opponent is. And I want to make sure it's a show that's well-produced, a show that I could be proud of being on. And this is going to sound really funny. It has to be something that I know I'm going to go out and have fun doing. And when I drive my car home, I could say, shit, that was a whole lot of fun. Yeah. I really enjoyed myself. Yeah, I can still go and tear it up. And I have a few extra bucks to put towards my vacation or whatever.
Yeah. You know? It's such a great thing because we always hear about the tragedies in wrestling, right? And again, the guys who were whatever didn't make it or didn't live to where they should have, or the guys that are just taking whatever booking they have to because they've got to make a few bucks. And it's nice to hear that other side, right? That healthy tale of a guy who had success, but had that fallback and like had to come out of it, be healthy, still keep that joy for wrestling and be selective on what he wanted to do. That's good. I think it's so good to hear that side of it. And
I'll always love the experiences, of course, with WCW. That was my biggest run.
Sure.
Wrestling Terry Funk, I've been to tag belts, having a hardcore belt and all that type of stuff. But when I really talk about it now, I can arguably say I may be having more fun now just because there's no pressure at all attached to it. I could feel open to suggest, like, if I see an up and coming indie guy that I think, you know, is good, who may not be getting the attention that they deserve, I feel very comfortable going up to a promoter, say, hey, if you don't have anybody for me to wrestle this show, how about you put me with this guy? I think we could have a really great match. Yeah. You know what I mean? And help elevate somebody else.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very cool, right? You're not doing it as a career. You're doing it for these experiences of the guys you like to work.
And I always say, I go, I'll work with whoever you want as long as I could have a good match. But if you haven't selected an opponent yet, I wouldn't mind working with X, Y, or Z, this guy, that guy, or the other guy, because I think they're good. And, you know, and very often they're nice guys too. I like nice guys. So, you know, if you're a guy with a good heart too, that helps. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And, and I would venture to guess that, that you're fitting into the locker rooms even better now than you probably did then.
Cause it's still weird. You know, it's still weird because now I know a whole lot less people than there's not many guys that I broke in with that are still out there. So it's at times it's weird, you know?
I would think so. Cause you're also in this position of lots of guys in those locker room, probably a little starstruck with you, right?
I don't think so. I don't see myself like that. I'm pretty easy going and down to earth. I just feel like sometimes I just don't fit in, you know, but I've always thought that way my whole life. So that could be me as well.
Well, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You know?
But I think that's a very healthy approach, right? That's a very humble approach.
Yep.
And I think that that's to be commended. And
thank you.
Yeah. And you've had, again, a great career. I've been a big fan of yours way prior to WCW days, but I was so happy when you got that spotlight in WCW.
Thank you. And
get to see a guy that I had, again, I traded tapes to see Devin Storm and some of your peers, and then to see you in WCW and get that run, it was great. It was like, I'm almost like that. You followed, right? This is my guy. This is the guy I followed.
Yeah. Yep.
And it was good to see you to get it. You deserved it.
Thank you.
And I'm so happy, right? That, again, that you have a great life, right? And you know, you have a great family that from everything I've read and you're a great business and and you get to do what you love still on your terms.
Yep.
And that's such a great thing, right? It's such a positive thing to get to talk to when it's a business that's so mired with dark.
Yes.
Yep. It's so great to hear someone that had a great run, had fun and came out of it even better and still having fun.
Still having a
yeah. And you look, I mean, at 52, you look great. It's unreal. Yeah. Yep. I mean, I'm not hitting on you, but you're just unreal. Maybe that's the physical therapist. But you make
modifications, as we said before. You know, for the people that don't know the behind the scenes, we have been trying to do this for a while. And I say the hardest part about being a pro wrestler now and doing podcasts and stuff like that is that I'm not a single 25-year-old guy no more.
That's right.
I run a business, which
that's right.
Some weeks, you know, we're talking 55, 65 hours. I'm a dad to two kids. I'm a husband and I really put a big priority on family time. So
yeah,
going to the gym, if I get an hour, like 15 minutes a day, it's a lot. So I don't have the time to train like I used to. So now as a result of that, you see Crowbar wearing a tank top. It's just just one of those things.
That's,
you
know, okay. Full circle, right?
Yes. I think I'm fit for a guy my age. I think I'm in good shape, but
yeah,
the time's just not there.
Yeah.
But to spend 2.5 3 hours a day in the gym no more.
Yeah. And again, I appreciate, again, I know, right, we've been going back and forth for a while, and I know how busy you are, how much you got going on. I so appreciate you giving me this time.
Oh, dude, no, thank you for being patient. You know,
no problem. No problem. Again, it was all my pleasure. What can, is there anything brewing on the horizon big that anybody should look forward to?
I think people should look. I work for like a handful of local groups right now. Awesome Championship Wrestling in Poughkeepsie. They really deserve a whole lot more hype than they're getting. Like, go to their page, look at the crowds they're drawing. They have been running the Mid-Hudson Civic Center, old WWF building. Now it's called the MJN Arena. I think this is their fifth or sixth show. They've been selling the place out, and it's like pay-per-view quality, stage, giant screen, lit like a pay-per-view and run so professionally. Yeah. I work for ISPW for Outlaw Wrestling. I like Fight Factory a whole lot. I have a show coming up for them soon. They run a great, great show as well. And just also other little local groups that are awesome, like Wrestling Magic. And this kid DJ Storms that's been running stuff locally, but I forget what his initials are for his Fed. I say local, and also Battleground, who runs out of Philly. If you've ever gone down there, what a production!
Sure,
what a show! It's Tim runs such a great thing down there.
Yep.
There's no shows on the horizon right now, and I'm just waiting to hear back from those guys. But they've been doing some fantastic stuff as well.
Yeah. Well, and if someone then wants to keep track of Crowbar, mix up my words there. What's the best way to follow you to know when these appearances pop up and everything else?
I'm mainly on X and Twitter, or Twitter X, whatever you want to call it. I'm starting to learn the Instagram. I haven't mastered it yet, but I try to share. When people tag me on like the show posters, I know how to share them. So on Twitter, it's at WCW Crowbar. And on Instagram, it's at WCW Crowbar 74, my birthday year.
Gotcha.
So.
All right. Very good. Well, when this comes out, I'll be sure to tag you. So that people can, you can share it and people can see it and follow you. Again, you pop up all over. You never know, right? Like I said, not too long ago in AEW, you never know where Crowbar might pop up.
Yep. I'm more than willing to do little one-offs or like minor programs. We'll see what the future holds.
Sure. You know, right.
This guy can still go. This guy can still go.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, reach out. You never know, right? Talk business with Crowbar. You never know what he'll do.
Sure.
And I appreciate you so much. I know how busy you are. I appreciate you working with me and giving me this time. It's an honor. Again, I've always been a fan of yours. It's an honor to talk to you. And it's just been a pleasure. And, down the road, who knows? Maybe we'll do a part two and talk a little more.
Well, I appreciate you so much for having me on, for having the patience, and just having an interest in me doing this thing that I freaking love doing. So
absolutely.
Thank you so much.
No problem.
Available on all streaming platforms, it's professional wrestling's greatest, largest, privately owned wrestling library. All the classic hits, flips, slams, and pins of yesteryear are on one place. It's Ultimate Classic Wrestling. Check out the Nature Boy Ric Flair, Hulk Hogan, Mr. USA Tony Atlas, Tito Santana, Rick Martel, a who's who of professional wrestling's greatest spotlight stars ever to grace the squared circle, all in one place. Grab the best seat in the house for memories and mayhem on Ultimate Classic Wrestling.
Hey guys, Ray Russell here. Lots of new stuff happening here at WrestleCopia. If you haven't checked out our website at WrestleCopia.com, it's a great way to keep up with the latest episodes of all of your favorite Copia programming, from the Wrestling Memory Grenade to Regional Wrestling with the Territory Talk, the Wrestling Stoop with the legendary Bob Roop, and of course all of those programs also available at your favorite podcast streaming platforms. And if you want to stay up to date with everything going on in the Copia world, all the latest news, random thoughts, fun videos, pictures, and more, make sure to join the more than 33,000 followers over at facebook.com/wrestlinggrenade. Don't be left out. And last, but definitely not least, it's what keeps the entire machine going. I'm talking about patreon.com/wrestlecopia. We appreciate your support in helping us pay the bills to keep the WrestleCopia Podcast Network running and enabling us to continue to bring you all the quality programming that we offer.
Okay, and thank you to Crowbar for coming on and doing that interview. Hopefully, we can follow up with him down the road and talk a little bit more about his career. Guys, make sure you follow me on social media. I'm on pretty much any platform. Just look up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty, or the handle is typically at The Dave Dynasty, and you can find me. Also, be sure to subscribe to me on YouTube for lots of classic wrestling content, plus all of my various podcasts. Also, go make sure you check out all of the WrestleCopia Network podcasts. You can find the individual shows on your favorite podcast platform, or you can visit WrestleCopia.com. Also, be sure to check out my friends at the Ultimate Classic Wrestling Library. Visit ClassicWrestling.net to sign up for your account, and then download the app on all of your smart devices. All right, guys, like I always say, make sure you follow me on social media. Keep an eye there. I will soon be announcing next episode's guest. You know it's going to be a good one. You know it's going to be fun. We're going to get lots of great stories, so make sure you subscribe. Make sure you follow me on social media so that you miss none of the news that I share, none of the history that I share, and because you don't want to miss an episode of Wrestling Nostalgia. Guys, thank you once again for joining me. Thank you for your support. Thank you for listening. And always remember, wherever you go and whatever you do, be good, be safe, and always keep on growing.
Fans, we brought you All-Star Championship Wrestling. This is Sam Manager thanking you for being with us and saying until next time, so long, everyone.